Okay, so good morning, everybody. Before we start, a few comments on the course evaluation. Overall, it's brilliant. So thank you very much. I appreciate very, very much that you seem to like the lecture. What is important for me is what do you write about potential ways to improve the lecture? And there was one comment, and I totally agree. The slides for reconstruction are lousy. There are too many typos, and the guy who is teaching the lecture is always promising to fix it, but actually he doesn't. That's right. That's also somehow due to the lack of time I have to fix these things. But yes, we have to work on that. That's some kind of unfair to give slides like this to you. On the other hand, you have the book, and you have the explanations. Another guy wrote, or another lady of the lecture wrote that it's way more efficient to read Zhang's book on reconstruction than attending the lecture. That might also be true. It was a little lengthy in terms of explaining things, but on the other hand, I always try to explain things how I see it, and if I teach that for 10 years, and I taught it the first time, actually, the reconstruction chapter in this extensive way, 10 years from now, I will do it faster, I promise, because then I have learned it all myself. Yeah. Learning by teaching is the way we work, or I work. So, yes, sir. That's a valid question. I try. So I currently plan to give the lecture on pattern analysis in summer. This will be a blackboard lecture, so I will do everything on the blackboard. Let's see how my workload changes with my job, my new job from April 1st. The sad side is I'm officially no longer a professor, actually. I really have to switch, and I'm an administration guy now from April or with April 1st. But I try to do that. Let's see how it will work. There are two arguments why I think it's doable. There is one, I was teaching all the time when I was finished with my master's degree. I was teaching all the time, also during the time I was working for industry, and I was also in the management level. And I was teaching at Mannheim University one day a week, and it was so inspiring for my daily life and my industry work that I appreciated that very much, and I saw more positive effects than just the workload. And the second thing is that my friends and colleagues who are in the Siemens board or in other boards, they also have time for teaching. It's just a matter of prioritization, and I think it's important to be in touch with the basic work of a university. Yeah. And I personally love to teach, yeah. And I think it's very entertaining for me, and for you it might not be so exciting, but I like it, and it also keeps my mind fresh. And to think in terms of algorithms and to think through problems is something that you should really do in your work, and I want to continue with that. So the answer is yes, I try it. And if I get tired teaching, I just stop. I'm not required to teach anymore. And also currently in my current position, I also do way more teaching than I'm required to do. I do a basic lecture on medical informatics. I have some seminars. I do this class here, and I'm not required to do that also. And it is additional work, and it also is sometimes a problem with preparing things. So sometimes I may appear a little bit unprepared, and actually you are right sometimes in your perception, but that's the way it is. Okay, good. So thank you for the positive evaluation. You know that last year I was so frustrated. I had a first year lecturer of medical engineering, and they just bashed me like crazy. They wrote things like, this guy is approaching us all the time. Please leave us alone, just do your lecture. We don't like the interaction. your jokes are offending, some people said. They were really annoyed by it. And I was really depressed after this evaluation. Now, not depressed, but frustrated a little bit. But maybe that first year students are not that, maybe that first year students are not ready for this type of lecture. I also asked them to close the notebook, you know. I mean, go into a first year lecture. They sit over there with a notebook, browsing the web, doing something stupid, during the lecture, and I was just asking them to stop that. Yeah, so there was none of them with a notebook, and they also hated me for that. How can a professor tell the students to be quiet? Yeah, that was also a problem. Good, doesn't matter, that's history. We talk about image registration. Yeah, let's just omit the overview because the evaluation is done, so I can do this in a different way. I will present an overview on Thursday. Let's continue in the text. What we are currently considering is the problem. You have a patient who has some markers in the skull. So think about the drill. You put some markers in the skull and you capture images. And now you have the points and the point correspondences. The computation of the point correspondences is a problem itself. So let's think we have the points, we have the point correspondences, and we have to compute the rigid transformation. Rigid transformation means no deformation. Non-rigid means bend. Yeah, you smile. You will remember this. You bend it, so you deform things. It's way more complicated. We do this in summer semester. In terms of math, at least, it's more complicated. So we have rigid transformation. We just rotate and translate things. And before, good morning, before we look into the general 3D case, we focus on the 2D situation. So we do 2D rigid registration based on point correspondences. Okay? Based on point correspondences. And the picture we have in mind on an abstract level is we have our 2D image plane. We have, let's say, a square. And we have the square here. And we know these two are rotated and translated. Yeah, they can be transformed in each other by rotation and translation. It appears a little stretched, but they should have the same shape. Yeah, good. Just switch this on. So these points here we call PI. These points here we call QI. And we say, I think on the left side we had Q, and on the right side we had R times P, Q, huh? And we said QI is R PI plus T. So we rotate and translate. And we have last week we have seen that we can write this in terms of an optimization problem. Now, bring this to the left side, compute the difference, compute the Euclidean norm, sum it over all the point correspondences, and if they perfectly fit, this sum should be zero. Yeah? So we have a least square estimator saying compute QI minus R PI minus T and minimize this for the rotation angle and the translation vector. So we have 3 degrees of freedom. Yeah? That was the That was the idea. And then we have seen one property of complex numbers, and that's where we want to continue today. One property of complex numbers. The multiplication of two complex numbers is a rotation and scaling. Yeah? Multiplication corresponds to a rotation and scaling. So if we have C1 times C2 is C, this is C1 absolute value times C2 absolute value, phi 1 plus phi 2 in terms of the Euler notation. Yeah, Yixin, you know the Euler notation from school or from bachelor, your bachelor program. We learn it at school. That's the difference. I'm kidding. Yeah. And so we can switch back and forth between two representations. It's the A plus IB representation or the Euler representation with the length of the vector times e to the power of I phi, which is nothing else but the 2D coordinate in terms of polar coordinates. Okay? So now we rewrite registration problem. In terms of complex numbers. We rewrite it in terms of complex numbers. So we have a rotation complex number. This is multiplied with the complex number associated with P plus the complex number T. And this is supposed to be the complex number Qi, and in more detail, that means Qi1 plus I times Qi2, that's the real part, that's the imaginary part, is R1 plus R2 times I. For the electrical engineers, the imaginary part is called I. Yeah? You call it J, we call it I. That's the difference between computer science and electrical engineering. We know what we do, not just by notation. Good. Pi 1 plus I times Pi 2. And you see the problem, I should have called it K because now I have two I's with a different meaning. One is the index and the other one is the imaginary part. Huh? That was your suggestion. I'm flexible. That's what you meant, right?
That's totally what I meant.
So we rewrote the rotation and translation in the language of complex numbers. Well, and it should be the same if we require where R is 1. It's the unit complex number because then it's just a rotation and not a scaling. You agree on that? You got it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Now we sum over all j, and we take the absolute value. Let's do the other way. And now what we do is we write for all j, so that means for all points we have in our correspondence situation, we have q j1 is a plus I q j2 is equal to. And what we now have to do is we just multiply things out. Okay, so we multiply r1 times pj1. Please be concentrated. Yeah, we have to see, and we have to make sure that I'm not doing anything wrong here. Yeah, that's the third year in German high school where you learn things like that, except the complex part, but the multiplication. And I'm close to say this is exactly what my daughter does currently, but this might be a pointer that it will end in a disaster in a few minutes, so I'm not saying it. Okay? So, this times this, this times this times this, and this times this. So we have plus. And now let's sort things. I times R1 times pj2. You agree on that? It's okay? Good. Tobias? You're fine with it? I multiply r1 with this and r1 with this, and I carry the I over, and I sort a little bit with respect to complex and real parts. Now I multiply r2 times I with this, so I have one I. I times R2 times PJ1. Okay? Gesundheit. Da-da-dum. Da-da. Now I have I times I. What is I square? Minus 1. So I have here a minus 1. And then I have R2 times PJ2. Do I have four terms? Yes, I do. And then I have T1. And here I have IT2. Okay, this is the equation we have for all the points P1, P2, P3, up to Pn. Okay, everybody in the audience got it? Okay, so we are happy with it. And now we get two equations for a given J. The real part on the left-hand side is the same like the real part on the right-hand side. So we get QJ1 is R1 plus PJ1 minus R2 PJ2 plus T1. And the imaginary parts are also the same. So I have QJ2 is equal to R1 PJ2 plus R2 PJ2. J1 plus T2. And now we are back to the real world, right? Now we forget again about the complex numbers. We just require these two equations and that for all the points J. So for each point, pair PJ, QJ, we get two equations. And if I take all the correspondences, I get two times the number of correspondences linear equations. They are linear in R1, R2, T1, T2. So we have a system of linear equations. So conclusion, four endpoint correspondences. And in our situation, we have just 4 points, yeah, 4 point correspondences. We get 2 times n linear equations. We just write the equations. We write the equations in terms of matrix notation, and we end up with an SVD problem, period. With one shot, we compute the rotation and translation. Yeah, we can first forget about the requirement that R1, R2 has to be a unit complex number and do it for rotation and scaling, or we can also enforce the length one requirement by using a Lagrange multiplier to solve that, period. So for us, equipped with all the math, the problem is solved. Yeah? We just write the system of linear equations, compute the pseudo inverse, and we are done. Yeah? Is everybody able to write the matrix structure that you have to compute this pseudo inverse of? Well, let's write the matrix A, where we have to compute the pseudo inverse of. Let's write the first line. This is what is our vector of unknowns? Well, the vector of unknowns is R1, R2, T1, T2. Yeah, that are the components of our two complex numbers, one for the rotation, the two first two components, the second one, the second two components for the translation. And now let's write the first line, where we have our J is equal to 1. So our equation is Q1, 1, Q1, 2, and so on. And how do we get Q1, 1? We have to write R1 times P1, 1, R2 times minus PJ2, and T1 is just weighted by 1, and T2 is not showing up in the above equation, in the first one. Yeah? We just read the first equation such that by multiplying this row vector with this column vector, we get the above line. Sir? Yes, thank you very much. OK. And the second line, what was your name, Christian?
Max.
Max. Ah, Tobias Max, I should know that. We look at the first point correspondence. Exactly. Yeah, and then we copy the two lines for different J values. Yeah, the first index is in the second pair. The first index is replaced by 2. In the third pair, it's replaced by 3, and so on. Yeah? So we get a matrix with 2 times n rows and 4 columns. And we have to compute the pseudo inverse of it, and we have the rotation and translation. That's 5 lines of MATLAB. If you implement this, it's 5 lines of MATLAB. Sometimes in the oral exam, I give my computer to the guy who gets the examination, and I ask, can you please type in MATLAB the solution of this system of equations? And then I have 2 situations. One is the strong ones say, are you kidding? I mean, that's trivial. Yeah? And I say, no, no, I'm not kidding. Do it. And then I relax for 10 minutes and this guy gets a 1.0. And sometimes students respond in a way, oh my God, I don't remember the MATLAB details and blah, blah, blah. And then it ends in a disaster, I can tell you. Yeah. Then I say, you want to have the 7.5 ECTS, so MATLAB is required. Yeah? And then we have the problem. And you know what the unfair part of the story is? Sometimes I ask something about MATLAB, sometimes I don't. Yeah? So if you read the web of the FSE, where you read all the comments on the lecture, you will find a lot of comments where people got 7.5 ECTS without a single question on MATLAB. And sometimes you find comments where they tell you, oh man, it went wrong. So it's a randomized process. Yeah, and it depends on my personal mood. The more I'm tired, the more the chance is that you get a MATLAB question. Okay. So to summarize, the 2D point registration problem is not an issue. So what did we implement in the first generations of registration-based software tools for radiologists? We asked them to click some points and point correspondences in two images, and then we just solved the system of linear equation, and we computed the transformation. And you're now able also to implement this. Yeah? And such a software module goes for 40, 50,000 euros. And if one license is 40, 50,000 euros, you can tell your boss easily, he's usually some economics guy, oh, that's a very complicated problem. It takes me 5 months for implementation. Yeah, so you have 5 months where you can enjoy your job, you can enjoy your life. This is implemented within 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or one day, but that's it. Yeah? Okay. I also find this to be a very exciting example for the power of complex numbers. Yeah? I mean, remember your good old days in your bachelor degree. You and your Chinese friends, you were sitting there asking a question, the square root of something of minus one, I mean, what does it make sense? Yeah, it actually makes sense because a lot of things can be solved very effectively and nicely using complex numbers. And it also took me many years to see things like that. Yeah? I also, in the second year of my career at the university, I was also not sure why these brain-driven constructions are useful. They are very useful. So if you meet your dad tonight, at dinner, you can tell him it's very important to know about complex numbers. What?
He will laugh when I said that because I did this one. Didn't go to.
He laughed with you? Why?
He laughed at me.
Why?
Because, yeah, well, he's not that much into complex numbers.
I mean, you can teach him. I mean, it's always nicer when I sit with my kids and my kids tell me what they do at school, and I always give them some nice questions they should ask the teacher, but they usually say, Dad, I can't do that, I won't do that. I mean, for instance, my son, he's in the first year of gymnasium, graduate school. Is it graduate school? I don't know. College. They are working on factorization of natural numbers in prime factorization. Yeah? And I mean, how they do it at school is a mess. Yeah, they, trial and error and blah blah blah. And I told him the Euclidean algorithm to do that. It's very simple, right? So the math teacher was quite impressed, I think. There are some nice methods that are easy to explain. Now Leah is saying, wow, that is exciting with the complex numbers. Yeah, she's saying, that's exciting. I can really push myself and motivate myself now for another 2 months because it's so exciting. And it's an important link to my previous lectures, and I know what these things are good for. And Max is saying, yeah, but you know, 2D, 2D, it's so boring. Their world is 3D, right? So we will look now into the problem. 3D points here, 3D points there. We know the correspondences, compute, rotation, and translation. So we have 3D registration. Of how did I write it into the of points? And we also look first at the rigid situation, right? So we have again the situation. We have three D reconstructions, like two CT data sets with the nails in the skull, yeah, boom, 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 nails, and we see the nails, and we have now the point correspondences here. And we need at least three. So we have such a triangle where we have here the point, the correspondences, and we want to know these are the PJs, and here the QJs, element of R3, element of R3. And we have to compute the rotation and the translation, but in 3D. Yeah, you can do that. You can project it on the XY plane and to do a 2D, 2D registration, but that will not work. Because if you project, you know, then you don't have the rigid transformation. You know? I mean, you move things around in 3D, and then the question is, to which plane do you project things such that you have a rigid 2D, 2D registration problem?
Okay. I thought on the same plane. So I overlap them and project the points on a 1D plane, and then...
On a 1D plane? 1D plane?
Yeah, on a 2D plane. So we have a 2D problem that can be solved like learned before, and after that we have...
The question is, which plane do you use such that you end up with the problem we have solved before? This is not trivial. This is not trivial. That you have the same mutual distances? That's not trivial.
Deutsch ist, brauche ich die überhaupt? Kann ich die Tiefe nicht aus der Projektion dann später raus ermitteln?
Yes.
Ich habe eine gemeinsame Bildebene, auf die ich projiziere.
Ja. Na, jetzt nimm mal an, dass sie, so assume you project to this plane and this plane. So you have the same plane, but you have different distances.
Yes, and therefore it's the second step.
Okay, what is the first step?
The first step is the projection on this plane and the computation of the 2D rotation matrix.
But the point correspondences here will not be expressed in terms of equations, because you cannot transform this projection to this projection by just the in-plane rotation of the 2D points. I mean, look at this. I have this here, and this isn't plane. Okay, I project this point and this point on this plane. Now you're saying I generate the second projection image. I do a 3D rotation and translation. So I do the extreme case, and you project this point and this point and these two points coincide. And then you cannot just do what we did before. Yeah. Killed. Leah says, hey, it was so cool with the complex numbers. I liked it very much, right? I'm so motivated. I'm so excited. And then the conclusion is there something similar with complex numbers in 3D? Yes, sir? Yes.
Can you measure distances?
Yes. Of course, you can measure 3D distances. But still, Leah says, I want to do it like with the complex numbers. Is there something similar? And I have to tell you, yes, there is. We extend, we extend complex numbers. We extend complex numbers to quaternions. Also something that you learn in lectures on algebra. So we you might think, okay, instead of I, or in addition to I, maybe we have some second complex imaginary part. Yeah, and then I tell Leah, you know, math is usually not as simple as you expect. Quaternions are not just having one additional imaginary part, but two additional ones. Yeah, so we will have quaternions saying A plus IB plus JC, plus KD, and IJ and K are imaginary parts. Their square is minus one, and their mixed products also fulfill certain properties. And with this construction, we can express, again, rotations in terms of multiplications of two quaternions, and we'll end up with a linear system of equations that have to be, has to be solved for computing the rotation. Sir, Max?
First, we have to solve a notational problem now, because now we will have I, J, K, so we have to reason.
L. In Franconia, L is wonderful. Prelabial L, Allmächt. BL. Yes? Yes, it's solved. We can do the same optimization problem like in 2D with a rotation matrix to be a 3x3 matrix built up by rotation around the x, y, and z axis multiplied with each other. But you will end up with a very complicated nonlinear optimization problem because you have the rotation angle around x, y, and z axis, and incorporated in sine and cosine functions and products of sine and cosine functions. And if you look at the objective function that you have to optimize, it will look like this. Yeah, and you have to compute the global minimum of such a function. And that's a very complicated problem. And there is one guy who submitted his PhD thesis in 1996, and he did the optimization of this function without knowing anything about quaternions. Yeah. It was me, yeah. And after having learned about quaternions, I was so frustrated. You will see very smart, of course, very smart ideas that try to solve this problem, but I really missed the point to jump into a different representation. What we want to end up with is with an objective function like this, where we have a unique minimum. And this way, this is a convex function, and this is also called convexification of the problem. That's a subdiscipline within optimization theory and pattern recognition that requires a lot of experience and understanding of problems. But usually we massage the objective function that has to be minimized such that we end up with an objective function like this. And this can be achieved by reformulating things, changing representations. And we will see that also for the 3D point matching problem, we can convexify our problem. Okay. But I forgot your first name. Natasha. Natasha made the point we need to think about how to represent the rotation matrix. So one subchapter now will be different representations of rotation matrices. Because the optimization problem we need to solve is the following. We have the BL. This is rotated and translated in 3D. And this ends up to be our vector QL. Yeah? And this equation has to be fulfilled for all the points that we have. And the optimization problem that we end up with is minimize sum over L QL minus R PL minus T. That's the optimization problem. Yeah? Minimize the difference and the length of the difference vector in terms of the Euclidean norm. Okay? I forgot the index of the Q on the right side. Yeah? Now the question is, how do we write this R here? And we will now have three different types of representation. Is this also happening to other professors that the beamer dies and you have to do right away a blackboard lecture? Yes. You should tell the administration of the university that we have lousy equipment. They have to fix that. Huh? We introduce, again, tuition, and then we can buy the nice equipment easily. Do you have to pay tuition in China?
Yes.
Yes. How much?
For bachelor, 5,000 RMB per semester. And for master's, they don't need to pay.
Okay. How much is 5,000 renminbis?
About 700 euros.
Ah, okay. We were cheaper. We were cheaper. It was 500, and we are now down to zero. Did you, by the way, participate at the vote for the election for the semester ticket?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. What did I want to talk about different representations for rotation matrices? And we will now talk about three different ways to characterize 3D rotations. What a headline, huh? What do you conclude out of these two words? There are two conclusions. He seems to like it. And the implication is, he might ask this quite often. Yeah, and actually, I do. So three exciting and outstanding representations of rotation matrices. Yeah. This is not for your dad, yeah? Because I have to appear serious. Good. The first type of representation was already mentioned by Natasha. We start with one that's the representation by Euler angles. The representation by Euler angles. So we have x, y, and z in 3D. And then we can rotate around the x-axis, or the y-axis, and the z-axis. Yeah? So we can rotate here by phi x. We can rotate here by phi y. And we can rotate here by phi z. OK? And the rotation is then the rotation around the x-axis, the rotation around the y-axis, and the rotation around the z-axis, for instance. OK? And this will allow us to represent any 3D rotation. But we have to be careful, because here we have the product of matrices, and we know the matrix product doesn't commute. Yeah? It doesn't commute, so it makes a difference whether you first rotate around the x-axis and then around the y-axis, or the other way around. And that's the first disadvantage of this type of representation, that it depends on the sequence of rotations. So this is also a pointer towards our final decision, what we do actually in practice. We won't work with this type of representation. This is the representation that seems to be very natural, but it has many disadvantages. How would you compute r of phi z, for instance? I won't do that in detail, because we know how to do that. A few sentences how you would do that, Tobias? Leah.
I would do one in the z component, so very down on the right side, the one, and zeros up and down. And in this square, those four will be sines and cosines, like we do all the time when we do the rotation, to be cosine, sine, minus sine, cosine.
Okay. Very complicated answer. I can't follow, but I think you're right. What is this more simpler argument? We just look at the base vectors and look what happens to the base vectors. You remember that? So we take the 1, 0, 0 vector. What happens to the 1, 0, 0 vector if we rotate? What happens to the 0, 1, 0 vector when we rotate? And what happens to the 0, 0, 1 vector if we rotate? And it's clear that the 0, 0, 1 vector is not affected by rotations around the z-axis. So the last vector, the last column in our rotation matrix, will be the unit vector. Yeah? So it will be 0, 0, 1. And in the plane, we have to see what happens to this vector. And if we rotate by phi z, it's just the sine and cosine game that we did in the 2D situation. So we will end up with a matrix where we have the 2 by 2 submatrix with the cosine and sine terms. The last column is the unit vector 0, 0, 1, and the last line is 0, 0, 0. That's it. Huh? And the same we can do for the rotation around the phi axis. For the rotation around the phi axis, the first column will be 1, 0, 0, and then we have our 2 by 2 submatrix on the lower right side. And if we rotate around the y axis, the second column will be 0, 1, 0, and then we have the sine and cosine terms in the first row and in the third row. And then we multiply things together. You can do this with Mathematica or with Maple in a symbolic way, and you get a horrible final rotation matrix where you have up to 3 factors of sine, cosine terms and the different angles, and oof, it's ugly. Yeah? So do we like this representation? We don't like this representation. Yeah? We don't like this representation. We don't like this. But actually equipped with all the knowledge we have, you can write down the optimization problem with this type of rotation matrix and then optimize with respect to phi x, phi y, phi z, t1, t2, t3. The objective function, you can plot the objective function for a fixed t and for a fixed rotation angle and vary with phi x and phi y, and then you will see it goes like crazy up and down. Okay? Good. So the optimization problem is difficult. The second representation I want to talk about today is the axis angle representation. The axis angle representation. What does that mean? The axis angle representation no color. The axis angle representation says that any rotation can be represented by an axis, an arbitrary rotation axis in 3D, and a rotation around this axis. And in mechanics lectures, you will also find a proof that any rotation can be represented by that. You have a rotation axis. We call that u, and then we have a rotation angle theta around this axis. So I just say if I want to do a rotation of something, I just have to decide here in the unit sphere in 3D what is the rotation axis and then the rotation angle, and I rotate around this angle. And I can represent by this the rotation very nicely also in the computer in terms of C++. You can write a class for rotation matrices, for instance, and you can represent a rotation by a single 3D vector. And how can this be done? Well, if I say I have to decide on a rotation axis, it doesn't matter. You just need the orientation, but it doesn't matter what type of length you have of the axis representation, right? So you can use a unit vector and then move the unit vector on the sphere and decide on the rotation axis. And then you have to add the rotation angle around the rotation axis, and the magnitude of this angle you just encode in the length of this vector. So the unit vector tells you the orientation, and the length is a pointer towards the rotation magnitude of rotation. The rotation angle. And you can represent the whole rotation in terms of a 3D vector. I mean, that's cool. I give you a 3D vector. You just look what is the length of the vector. You transform the length in terms of a rotation angle. And the orientation tells you what is the rotation axis. Okay? Isn't that cool? So we have here any rotation can be represented by a rotation axis and a rotation angle. Okay? And the representation of rotation matrices is also a brilliant example for object-oriented programming. You have your abstract class for rotation matrices with certain properties like the determinant is 1 and things like that. And then you have different representations. The Euler angles, you have the axis angle representation, and you have your quaternion representation, and then you have constructors that take a R matrix in the representation of axis angle and converts it to Euler angle representation and everything. You know, many, many nice things can be done. And you will find for sure some nice implementations of these classes in the web. Or you can also come up with nice implementations of these classes yourself. Yeah, I think once a lifetime you should have implemented this. Yeah, like the Fourier transform. Once a lifetime, you as an engineer, you have to have implemented this. And as an engineer, we always try not to get lost in details. We always try to get not lost in details. And we know that we can now apply a few plausibility checks. I mean, I omit the proof that all matrices can be, rotation matrices can be represented in the axis angle notation, but we can check a few ideas, a few properties of the rotation matrix that we know by definition. For instance, what are the eigenvalues, eigenvectors of rotation matrices? Eben nicht. They are not all real. One is real, 3 by 3. One is real, the other two are complex. And what's about the real eigenvalue of a rotation matrix? It's one. Where did you know it from?
Guess.
You guess. Okay, it's right. Okay. Did you see the four circles on did you really see it or did you know it?
I really see it.
I was sitting the whole week and looking at this picture and asking myself, scaling and moving it quickly and look at it, and I don't see the four circles. I can confirm it by following the lines, but I don't see it. It really frustrates me.
Right?
I'm not used to deal with outliers. But it just confirms that I'm following the right strategy. My strategy is, and I'll tell you, I always try to have people in my environment that give me the feeling they are better than me. And what is the effect? The effect is, if they are better than me, they also attract people that are better than they are, and so the whole system ramps up. And some managers, they have the strategy, do not hire people where you have the feeling they might be better than you, because they will put your career on a risk track, because they will bypass you. So what happens? The guy you hire is 80% of your performance. This guy hires somebody who is 80% of his performance, and then you can imagine how the overall performance of the organization looks like. So it's always worth a thought. Hire people where you have the feeling they are way better than you are, and they will push you also forward. That's the reason why I will become president. Yeah? At this point, my scientific knowledge is no longer required, because they know they can do it better than me. Okay, so let's reorganize my thoughts. Let's check whether this matrix we will end up with, or this representation, will end up with a rotation matrix that has the eigenvalue 1. Well, what does it mean, a rotation matrix has eigenvalue 1? That means I take a vector x, I rotate the vector x, and this should be the vector x again. That means eigenvector 1. There is a vector x that is rotated, and you end up with exactly the same vector. We had the situation here when I talked about rotations around the z-axis. I was saying the points on the z-axis do not change. Yeah? Right? You remember the argument I made? If you rotate around the z-axis, all the points on the z-axis stay the same, because they sit on the rotation axis. And here, it's actually the same situation. If I have an arbitrary rotation axis, all the points that sit on you, all the points that sit on the axis defined by you, they are not modified by the rotation matrix. Yeah? So we conclude x is u. So if Natasha is computing a rotation matrix based on rotations around the x, y, and z axis, and I want to know what is the rotation axis, I just have to rotate the points around, I compute the eigenvalue, eigenvector decomposition, and I take the eigenvector that corresponds to the eigenvalue 1, and I have the rotation axis. Cool. I like that very much. Implication, I ask it quite often. Yeah. So if you want to know what is the rotation axis, in terms of the rotation angle and rotation axis representation, you compute the rotation axis easily by just computing an eigenvalue eigenvector decomposition. And take the vector, the eigenvector that belongs to the eigenvalue 1. OK? Cool. Very good. And how would you compute the rotation angle given a rotation matrix? You can either do it by the complex eigenvalues because they sit in there, but you can also do the following. You can take an arbitrary point that does not sit on the axis, you rotate this point. And then you compute the angle between these two vectors. Yeah? That's standard linear algebra. It can also be. Yeah? You take a point, you rotate the point, and then you just look what is the angle between the two vectors, and we know the cosine. The cosine is the inner product of the two vectors, and then we have it right away. Okay? Good. Now the question is, given U and theta, what is R? And for that purpose, we need the so-called Rodriguez formula. That's a famous Brazilian mathematician. I have no idea. It sounds Spanish, Rodriguez. Okay, and that's what we are going to look at now. And I need the pictures here from my slides to explain this to you. Before we look into the details, we need the definition of the skew matrix. If I take two vectors in 3D and I compute the cross product, how is it defined, the cross product? You remember that? How is the cross product defined? Well, you take A, you take B, and the cross product is the orthogonal vector to these two vectors in terms of a right-handed coordinate system. No? You know that. A, B, orthogonal vector. How do you compute the cross product? Huh? ITK?
Yeah, ITK is 3.
Ah, okay. Yeah, basically you have to compute 3 determinants. Yeah. One is A2, B2, A3, B3. One is A3. A1, B3, B1, I hope I'm right.
Oof. I think we can directly write it in 3 times 3 matrix.
Yeah, of course, yeah, but that's the way I remember it. I hope I do it correctly. And then I have A1, B1, A2, B2, right? Is it right? And then I can write this in terms of A2B 3 minus A3B2, A3B1 minus A1B3, A1 H B2 minus A2 B1. And this is linear in A and B, and they're components of A and B, so I can rewrite this in terms of matrices. So I can write A X B, where this is a 3x3 matrix. And how does the matrix look like? Well, the first line is 0, A2, 0 minus A3, A2. The second line is A3, B3, so we have minus A1 for the third component, 0. And then we have B1, that's minus A2, minus A2, B2 is A1. That looks correct. Yeah, so the whole thing is written in terms of a matrix vector product. And this is this Q matrix. This matrix is symmetric, but this symmetry is not given directly, but we have the negative components on the lower side of the matrix, the lower triangle. Okay? So we can rewrite the cross product in terms of a matrix vector multiplication. And whenever I write this in the following, I mean this matrix. Okay? That will simplify notation in a few seconds for us. It's really correct. So, and what we are now going to prove is the following. Rodriguez says the rotation matrix is, for a given axis, angle around the axis, is U times U transpose. U times U transpose. So that's a projection matrix, actually. U times U transpose. A 3x3 rank 1 matrix. Plus the identity matrix minus U transpose. Weighted by cosine theta. Plus, and the last term is this Q matrix of U weighted by sine theta. So given U theta, you compute the rank 1 matrix, U times U transpose, 1 minus U transpose weighted by cosine theta plus this Q matrix sine theta. And now we have to prove that this is the proper representation. We have to prove that. And it's very useful to know about this formula and the axis angle representation because it's required in mechanics a lot, if you do mechanics or if you do robotics. In robotics, you need it every day. You need it on a daily basis. Yeah? So it's not a waste of time. Okay, now I need the important image here. Let's look at the situation. We have our, I have now to build the images because someone took out the images. I explain it usually. So we have to derive this now on our own. So this is the rotation axis. U. The rotation axis. And this is our point V. This is our point V that we want to rotate. Yeah? So we sit in 3D, and now we want to rotate this point around the axis U, so something like this. Okay? You can imagine this. Take a point, we have the axis, and then we rotate the point by theta around the axis. This is the situation, and we rotate around the axis. Okay. Now these two vectors, they span a plane. Okay. If I take a vector that is orthogonal to this plane, I have a coordinate system for the 3D space. Okay. So how do I compute now? This vector that is orthogonal to U and V, well, I can compute this vector by computing the cross product of U and V. Okay? And this here is the rotated point RV. And the question is, what are the coordinates of RV in terms of this coordinate system? And that's what we have to compute. The coordinates of this. So we can compute first the vector that we get if we orthogonally project V on U. What is this projection? What is this point here? Who can tell me what this point here is? It's the scalar product of V and U. So it's V transposed U times U. Huh? Let me just go back here. Password protected. I don't have my nice images. Okay, so this here is this. And how can this be written in terms of a matrix A times V? Can somebody reorganize this? Well, this is the same as, this is a scalar, right? This is a scalar here. This is a scalar. So we can commute U and V. So it's U transposed V times U. It's the same. And this is exactly the definition of the outer product. So we have U transposed times V. So we have the first component here, that's U transposed. Oh, we will find that later in the Rodriguez formula. Okay? What is the mapping of V on UXV? Yeah.
That means it's perpendicular to V.
So it's zero. So it coincides here with this point. Yeah. Okay.
Zero.
It's zero. What else? I'm flying now a little bit without the slides. Give me one more second. Here is the picture I want to have. So what we now do is we rotate the situation UV and the cross product. We wrote it in a way that U and V sit in the plane of the blackboard, and UXV goes outside of the blackboard orthogonally. Okay, that's the situation we look at now. So. We have here our V. We have here our U. And out of plane, we have UXV. So that sits in the plane of the blackboard, and this goes out orthogonally. Okay? And now we want to have here an orthogonal base vector. An orthogonal base vector, that means we project here V on U. We know already that's U transposed of V. And now we project it here on this, and we compute this vector that is orthogonal to U. Okay? So, and what is this vector? This vector here is exactly the difference vector here of these two. So this vector here is U transposed V. Wait, there's brackets here. This is this vector here. It's just the difference V minus this here. And this can be written in terms of identity matrix U transposed times V. Look at this. So we will see this later on in the final formula. So that's important. That's one component. That's the other component. Okay? And this here is U times X times V, UX times V. And now we just need to incorporate somehow the sine and cosine weights for the rotation. And what does the rotation do? The rotation, now we have set up a three-dimensional coordinate system, attached to U and V. And it's an orthogonal coordinate system. This is one axis, this is the other axis, and this is the third axis. And these vectors here are our base vectors. Okay, and now we rotate around U. That means that we have now an out-of-plane rotation, of the vector v by theta. And now what we have to do is we rotate the whole scenario and look into this plane and look what happens to this vector and to this vector. Yeah? Again, we have now the coordinate system. We rotate around u. And now we have to see what happens to this vector and to this vector by rotation. And so what we do is we now look at the plane where we can visualize the rotation. And that means our u vector is now going out of the board. And we look at the plane spanned by these two vectors and at the corresponding rotation. So what we do is we look at this picture here. And we have our u x v vector, and we have our 1 minus u transposed v direction. So we look at this plane here, and this plane spanned by these two vectors here. Yeah? And our u goes into the orthogonal direction. And rotation around u means all the points on u are not changed. And the points that are outside of u or not sitting on the rotation axis, they are changed and rotated by theta. So we now rotate the whole thing by the angle theta in this here around the u vector, we rotate the whole thing around u. Once again, it's important to see where the coordinate system sit. We have u, we have the orthogonal vector in plane with u and v, the point that has to be rotated, and we have the orthogonal vector. And now we rotate around u. That means we do an out-of-plane rotation here on our blackboard. And what we do now is we look at the rotation from this direction, from the u direction. And what we see here is that we get weights. And the weights are the cosine and sine terms. This is the sine of theta. And this is the cosine of theta. And if we look at the final result, we have to weight our y direction here by the cosine and our x direction by the sine to compute the final v vector with a proper rotation. So if we build things together, what do? We project our v vector on u, because that's the component of the v vector that is not affected by rotation. So that remains constant. The projection of the v component on this orthogonal axis to u, yeah, is changed by the rotation given the weight sign. And the component that is mapped on the cross product of v and the rotation axis, that is changed by the cosine theta. And then we get finally here the rotation matrix. That's the idea. You can derive the formula by looking at what happens to v after rotation, given the rotation axis and the original v vector. And that's what we built up here. If you multiply this by v, you get exactly this representation of the rotated point. Yeah? First, we look at v in this artificial coordinate system defined through u, v, and the cross product. Then we replace v by another vector that is orthogonal to the rotation axis. And then we have a coordinate system that sits in 3D space, an orthogonal coordinate system. Then we compute the components of v based on this coordinate system. And we look how the vector changes by rotation around the y-axis. And the only change we have is given here by the sine and the cosine. Yeah? That's the idea of the axis angle representation. Nice idea, easily implemented in terms of a C++ class with all the nice operations like multiplication and also the constructors given a rotation matrix in terms of Euler angles. How do you compute the axis, the rotation angle? That's worth a try to implement these things in C++. And play around with it. Thank you very much, and see you on Thursday.